Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 327 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's episode, we'll be doing a little bit of trivia, talking about seven films that are currently and or in release right now, and our thoughts on three upcoming trailers. A lot of things to talk about tonight. Let's waste no time. We're going to skip past all the crazy stuff going on in Hollywood right now in terms of Miramax, Weinsteins, and all this kind of stuff, and just focus on reviews and trailers tonight. You think that's a good idea, or you want to talk about that?
I think everyone's already said everything needs to be said about that. So,
I'm a little upset, though. Good. I wasn't touched, and I did a lot to get this show.
I was touched by the... You may be suppressing some memories about how you got this show.
Yeah, I know. We didn't get it the old-fashioned way, I'll tell you that. Not through hard work. All right, here's the trivia question for tonight. Name this film. It is the lowest-budgeted film to ever have a commercial spot during a Super Bowl. So those much coveted 30-second trailers that are multiple million-dollar buys for studio companies. This studio bought a trailer for this horror film. I'll give you that cheat. And this is the lowest budgeted film to ever be advertised during a Super Bowl. Do you know what it is? And you know the budget?
My guess would be Blair Witch, I guess. I don't know. Is that right?
What, no, it's not. This is going to surprise you. Now, you got the right genre, because it is a horror film.
Well, you said that. That's why. Well, yeah, so okay, like, guess that. I can't really imagine.
I was trying to pump up your self-esteem. You got something right there,
this
kid.
This is a 90s thing, I'm guessing?
No, it's actually...
Or is this newer than that? Ooh, mm-hmm. Okay. What is it?
The film Valentine.
Hmm.
Budgeted at $10 million, starring your boy Angel, David Boreanaz there, of SEAL Team. On CBS right now, which is just a preposterous show. But regardless, that was the lowest budgeted movie ever to be advertised during the Super Bowl. And that was kind of come out on February 14th. And if you remember, the Super Bowl that year in 2000 was early February. So the following week, it was a good buy for Warner Brothers, at least to get some exposure on a movie that was extremely forgettable. So much so that when I mentioned the title, it probably took you a second to even think of the movie I was talking about, right?
No, I... know exactly what you're talking about. I know that movie.
Oh, you'd read it. Okay, yeah.
It's not good.
Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, it's terrible.
You say it's terrible. I saw it in a theater. That's how bad I saw it.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having to watch that in a theater. It's just so crappy straight to video thing. I don't know. They did that for a while, though, didn't they? Especially with horror movies around that time. They did release quite a few of them that probably should not have been released in theaters.
They were scraping the bottom of the barrel after Kevin Williamson had redone the whole genre and spun it on its head. There's a whole slew like that. Like Soul Survivor, remember that one?
Yeah, another Buffy alum. I mean, Blumhouse does the same thing. They just somehow are making smarter movies, but they're really just as low-budget horror genre movies, as much as those are. Those were just... more, there were a lot of slasher things back then. Just, I guess a cheap movie today goes a lot further than a cheap movie even 15 years ago. So
I think the Blumhouse stuff is handled with a lot more care than something like Valentine was.
Yeah, it's definitely more artistic, you know, for sure. They're picking better scripts.
All right, let's move on and talk about film since we're in a reviewing mode here. You got a chance today to see The Foreigner, Jackie Chan teaming up with Pierce Brosnan and Martin Campbell, right?
The Chinaman.
Yeah, right. That's the name of the novel it's based on. And mm-hmm. I like that they quietly changed the name to The Foreigner.
I know,
and this movie's
right?
already made $100 million worldwide, so it doesn't really need the American audience to get behind it. But what were your thoughts on it?
So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very strong 90s, more realistically, it's early 2000s straight to video. But it's really good straight to video stuff. It's kind of a messy story, but it's controlled chaos, you know? And so Jackie Chan's character and Pierce Brosnan's character aren't necessarily at each other. They're not even really dealing with each other throughout the movie. You know, they kind of have their own things going on. But Jackie Chan, of course, if you've seen the trailer, wants the names of the guys that to set off the bomb that killed his daughter. And so it's really the only reason he's bugging the shit out of Pierce Brosnan throughout the film. But there's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of things going on, I guess. You know, Pierce Brosnan, it could have been its own movie without Jackie Chan. It could have been its own movie without Pierce Brosnan. You know, there's just a lot of stuff going on that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with anything. Like Jackie Chan doesn't necessarily change the movie by being in it. If that makes any sense, if you see this, you'll know what I mean. Just for the reason that he's really living his own story, you know,
but you're recommending it because you're giving a very odd review. Are you recommending
it's a weird movie in that sense but that's a surprising part of it. As I said, Controlled Chaos, like it's actually really intriguing, for brief moments, I would say, but I really enjoyed watching a movie that probably doesn't deserve a theatrical release, in today's, you know, times, but is well directed and kept me interested through the whole thing, and it made me feel like kind of like a teenager again. You know, it's very reminiscent of like I said, late 90s, early 2000s, just straight regular action films.
Well, that's good, because from the trailer I got a whiff of The November Man, which was so convoluted and so disappointing, that last Pierce Brosnan action thriller that came out a couple years back. But this is to be helmed by Martin Campbell, who obviously did the James Bond, GoldenEye, and Casino Royale. But I think he did a great job with Heart of Darkness, the Mel Gibson one that was a redo of his films from years before that came out about 7 years ago. That was a great little movie. And this kind of looked like they had that moody vibe that Heart of Darkness had as well. So really wanted to check this one out. And you are recommending it.
Yeah, especially... I mean, I went to the early bird showing of this. There was a bunch of old people in there. You've seen the trailer. You know if you're going to like it or not. You know, I don't recommend this, like, if you're just a Marvel movie person or you expect it to be like what the action movies now, like Kingsman, which you're going to review today. If you expect it to be anything like those, you're probably going to be underwhelmed with it. The sound design's actually very... When the bomb goes off at the beginning of this movie, it is not loud. Like, the sound design's really muted, I thought. And it's just things like that that come off as almost cheap in a way, or maybe, you know, inexperienced, I guess you would say, that you see a lot on straight to streaming, I guess now, movies. But back in the day, you know, with the straight to DVD stuff, even the Steven Seagal type stuff, things that was straight to DVD, you saw stuff like that, you know, and those continuously obviously got cheaper, so that got worse. But
are you sure they didn't just turn down the volume for you blue hairs at the early bird special?
No, they didn't, because everything else was loud. It was the mix. Okay. You know,
I do want to see this movie, so I'm gonna give you my review on that next week, because you caught up on some good stuff this week. I saw Kingsman, which you just alluded to, Kingsman 2: The Golden Circle. And really, you and I both loved, I mean, I would say the first one's a 4-star movie, wouldn't you? Highest recommendation.
Especially because expectations were exceeded. Yes.
Yeah.
You did not expect that movie to be that, what it was. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that this is the best sequel they could have possibly made from that first film. It's not. The one thing that this movie lacks, the one thing that's keeping it from a 4-star recommendation, is that it does not have that ingenuity, that kind of innovation, the freshness, even though it's a retread, but like it's you know, it's a little slower in spots because it's cumbersome in the fact that it has to bring Colin Firth back into the story, even though he's not integral to it. This is really about Eggsy and Merlin, the Mark Strong character, the technical guy who finally gets out in the field. And it's, of course, it sounds cliched because it's all cliche. What really makes the film is Julianne Moore, who I've never really been a fan of. I liked her in Boogie Nights and a couple of things here and there, Magnolia, when she's put to good use, but never in a regular entertainment like this, a blockbuster entertainment. She's great as this cartel head who wants to become legitimized and has poisoned her drugs with this thing that gives her, the users, a rash, and she's going to control the antidote. But the movie is odd because it makes this weird statement about the war on drugs effort, and people that are recreational drug users aren't that bad, but should we even be using drugs? It was way more sophisticated of an argument and a theme than I was expecting a movie particularly about Kingsman and Secret Service stuff, but really well done. Acting is fantastic here all around. The Matthew Vaughn, his camera moves so fast and he has such weird angles and shit. It's like Good Guy Ritchie is the best way I can explain it. The kind of shit that Guy Ritchie does, it irritates me, and Michael Bay seems lazy for doing. Matthew Vaughn's doing, and it seems like, oh man, you're reinventing the whole system here. The best part about this is it's basically a 1960s James Bond movie with a modernized message and using the most modern technology to give you a cool action sequence. Because the first 15 minutes of this movie does not stop. And then, of course, it has a lull while it tells its story. But for a 2-hour and 10-minute, 2-hour and 20-minute movie, it moves fairly well. And it's just as smutty as the first one. There's, you know, there's a really some raunch and tasteless shit that goes on here, but it's also very, very clever and extremely well written. I highly recommend this movie.
Well, that sounds like it escaped the issues that Kick-Ass 2 and the Sin City sequel had, where it just couldn't even come close to what the originals did, you know. So at least they were able to, I guess, keep it going.
And I think it's because of the villain. It really does. The villain is interesting, and the people, the statesmen themselves. You know, I don't want to give anything away here, but Channing Tatum is barely in this film. It's really the other guy, Agent Whiskey, Pablo Pascal, I believe his name is, who's fantastic in this. He was the sidekick in Great Wall.
Because obviously, what's his name, was upset that with the trailer spoiling the return of
Colin Firth.
Colin Firth. Would that have done anything?
No, plot line is the weakest point of this film and drags it down and slows it down because it's supposed to be the heart of the movie. It's not necessary. It really isn't. He's not the one it's not his story. So him being in it or not has nothing to do with it. That's why I thought that was kind of bullshit that they even alluded to that, because you know it's coming and I don't know. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. But the acting and the joke, I mean, even the main character, that kid is really good in this movie. The whole thing's great. So I really recommend it. I don't understand why it's not doing more business, because it really is fun. It's the best time I've had at the movies in a while now. So it really is. So tell me about Blade Runner 2049. This is the big boy that was supposed to be the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but is now, you know, the little boy in the corner in the dunce cap. What's going on?
And you know what? I'm not surprised by that. I will say that I told you after I saw this is a strong contender for my favorite of the year. Talk about, you know, they constantly trying to remake or re-envision or whatever the fuck they want to call it, these old movies. And this is a beautiful, perfect sequel. I mean, fits right in. The casting is fucking fantastic. You know, Ryan Gosling, you know, is essentially playing Harrison Ford. But they do interesting stuff in casting people who kind of look like other people from the first Blade Runner. So you get a sense of like the world. It just feels very at home in the same world. You know, like you feel like, oh, this is definitely a continuation. It takes its time. You know, it's a movie that did not bother me at all that this thing was paced out. But it's beautiful. The score is beautiful. It's just shot beautifully. The acting's fantastic. And the storyline is great. It's hardcore sci-fi. It actually, much like the first one or any hardcore sci-fi from the 80s and 90s, it actually deals with the philosophical issues of these androids and of being a real what does it take to have a soul, right? And so for those reasons, I just thought this was fantastic.
The one argument I keep hearing is that it's paced, that it's measured.
And I will say that I really like that about this. So many movies nowadays don't take the time to have moments. This movie has moments. Which is something that I don't know, I miss, you know. I don't like these movies that just keep going and going and going, and they're so fast paced, and they do this and that, and it's can we slow down? Can we have a scene? Can we have a moment? Can we see something play out and constructed in some way? I mean, does everything have to be so quick?
I know you're a fan of science fiction. It's probably your favorite genre. Is this one of those cases where you're in love with it because it fits into your sensibilities, or do you think this is a good movie?
Well, both.
Yeah, I mean, because I know you like you.
I think this is a good movie, but
you gave me a recommendation of Valerian earlier in the year, so I'm trying to see where this stacks up on that.
No, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is not. Well, Valerian, I think I've been pretty open about that. This is very different. This is really good. This is a real movie. Valerian's a clusterfuck, but I still, you know, for whatever reason, I still like it. But I don't, I would never, you know, I don't feel protective of Valerian in any way. You know, throw it on the fire. It's a piece of crap. This, however, I just disagree. You know, after having seen things like Alien Covenant and all this other shit that comes out that tries to do this, and this is literally just perfection on like on every level, I thought, for me.
It sounds like you're the reaction to this you're having is how I felt when I first saw Creed, you know, where I thought
it's exactly like that. And you know what? Creed didn't do the same for me. So I'm not expecting this to do necessarily the same for anyone else. And in all honesty, Blade Runner, it really is not that wildly popular. So I don't know why continuing the story perfectly and making essentially a fantastic another Blade Runner movie would lead you to believe that it would be a big opener or that people would want to see it, you know?
Well, this director, though, obviously is a talent to watch.
This director, I have not seen. I've only seen Sicario, which I will say not a great.
You saw The Arrival.
Not a great written thing. I did see Arrival. You're right. Again, not a great movie either. But both extremely well directed. And this one is the same. It's just exactly the same. You know, beautifully framed shots. Just, you know, camera movements, the way things, scenes are blocked and the way things play out. Just, yeah, like you can tell like, oh, this guy knows how to direct, you know, you're definitely feeling like you're witnessing, I don't know, a scene, you know, there's actual artistry in here.
There's a something lot of artistry gets, over a 3-hour runtime, basically. That's a long...
But you know what? I didn't feel that. I didn't even realize... I went into this really thinking this was, you know, a little over 2 hours long. And when I came out, I still thought it was just about 2 hours long. So it didn't do that to me. But I was really pulled into this on every level. And by everything, the acting in this is just fantastic. And I love the story. This has a storyline that you think you figure out. I don't really, I'm in no way want to ruin this. So watch this and definitely try to figure it out because it has a twisty storyline and it's well made. It's well written, you know, it's well envisioned just throughout it. So
I
delivers,
I will
I
get
think
around
delivers
to see this.
Everything it promises plus some for me anyways.
They're talking about the, you know, the critical aspirations of putting this into the Oscar nomination categories and trying to get some support around that. So this might be around for a while.
To put this into perspective, I also really love The Bad Batch, and these are very similarly paced films.
Okay.
So.
Let's talk about Baywatch. You caught up with Baywatch, Dwayne Johnson, Zac Efron film that I consider to be maybe at the top spot or the top three of my worst of the year. An absolutely dreadful experience for me. What'd you think?
Yeah, so I didn't think it was the worst of the year, although there's so many this year's a train wreck. But in no way is this good. I'm flabbergasted, honestly, just watching this is like, what in the hell? What were they thinking? Why? This makes no sense. This is stupid. This is dumb. This is over the top in all the wrong ways. It's not funny. It's not good action. It's not, it's just not, it fails on like every level. It's really unbelievable.
This is exactly why it's one of my top three spots for worst of the year. Did you not think that one of the major problem was is that everybody was too cool for school, that nobody was – like, who's the funny guy here? Who's the straight man? Who's the comedian? Everybody's kind of cool but making jokes, and why is the C.J. Parker character attracted to the heavyset kid? Because it's just because it's different? I mean, because you wouldn't expect that? But
well,
it's not different.
I mean, lots of things do that. I don't think they necessarily handle that poorly, but it's just a – it's just a basic thing. Like the comedy stuff, I think the normal stuff that happens in this is really basic, but the over the top stuff, just really like the action stuff just kind of ruined it.
Oh, come on. You're going to tell me I knew this movie was fucking ridiculous in that opening montage when he pulls the guy out of the water and it says Baywatch behind him. You think, oh, fuck, this is going to be a long situation. And
yeah, that's too much.
The whole central... I mean, they've been doing the – since Beverly Hills Cop, they've been doing the action comedy thing where it's a drug dealer and they're going for the big shootout at the end and a comedy has to stop to make it a shootout and an action movie. But this movie was so uninvolving. By the time the big action finale comes, I was just like – it just kept dragging on and on.
Well, I'm fine with action comedy, but that's not what this was. This couldn't figure out if it wanted to be a comedy or an action movie, you know. And so it was like over-the-top action – that I guess you would think might fit with a comedy, but really there's not a lot of comedy in the action. What was really fell flat. And then the comedy is just not good comedy. So it's like a combination of everything that's bad, you know, like it's all bad. Like, there's nothing good I could honestly say about this movie. And it's boring as fuck too for a lot of it, especially the comedy segments where they're just being Baywatch people. It's just so utterly pointless.
Did you notice how bad the continuity was in this movie?
No.
I said that in my initial review that if you go,
I didn't really watch it that carefully.
the continuity was all over the fucking place. It was really obvious on a big screen. And clearly the 21 Jump Street was like the jump off point for this, if you will, and what they were aiming for.
Oh, yeah.
But the difference to me, the huge difference is that Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum actually have chemistry and screen presence. And while Efron and Johnson have screen presence separately, they have no chemistry together at all. I thought they had zero comedic energy.
Well, I would say the same about the entire cast, really. It just felt very much like these – it felt like everyone was acting, you know, first of all. But even the girls in this weren't, didn't seem like they were so present, or they were, there was like with the females and even the males, you know, the whole cast, they were supposed to be as cool as school, as you say, or
too cool for school, baby.
God. Yeah. Too cool for school. But they, it was like this weird imbalance where they couldn't quite get it right. Are they intelligent? Are they stupid? Mm-hmm. You know, and the CJ Parker character kept doing this back and forth, and it like interfered with the whole, you know, ugly kid that she was then interested in. And then was she interested in him? Was she not? I never really felt that she went full bore into falling in love with him. I don't see why she fell for him. You know, they never really set that up.
Never explained
in any way.
It. Yeah, it's supposed to be funny. It's just supposed to be funny. The thing goes bizarrely haywire early. I think it gets uninteresting and torturously boring by the end of it. And to me, it just was miscalculation after miscalculation. That's what I just kept thinking. It's like, oh, that's miscalculated. That's missed time. That's off. That's a, you know, a movie by committee if there ever was one. Let's move on. Let's talk about Masterminds, another dog shit comedy. This was at least from 2016, which this movie was.
I finally watched this today. I want to say this. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, and I did laugh quite a few times. And it was
because Galifianakis is funny in this.
Kristen Wiig I thought was very funny.
Yes.
You know, Kate McKinnon is funny in it as well. The movie itself, like the story, is fucking terrible. Especially by the time he gets down to Mexico, it's just like, holy shit, where is this
going?
You
know? I know. What's happening? Theater seeing that, and you're going,
but,
oh, are we done yet with this?
Watching
thing?
This, oh god, yeah. If I had seen this in theater, I would have absolutely hated it. But having my expectations completely trashed, and watching this on a small screen where I didn't necessarily have to pay full attention to it, it was fine. You know, it didn't hurt me, you know, it was okay, but I still, I'm sure, I know, I understand how it could, but it just didn't for me. So I guess I don't hate this movie, but it is not in any way fucking good. And I don't understand why the Jason Sudeikis character never learns that this guy's real name is David, not Mike, even by the end of the fucking movie. Like, wouldn't he kill him at the end of the movie when he picked him up from prison? And wouldn't he know he's not... His name's not fucking Mike. They stole your identity and
once
gave it to
again,
this guy. I don't fucking...
I was so uninvested by that time. I just wanted the movie to be over. To let me go. It was like being a hostage on a roller coaster you didn't want to be on. Mm. You got to admit that Keeping Up with the Joneses is a far better movie, even though that's got its own problems. That's a way better movie and better use of Galifianakis' talent.
Yeah,
it's a real movie. This is a sketch.
That's a fun movie. That movie was funner than I thought it was going to be. And I agree. I mean, that movie's better than Baywatch, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think The House is better than Baywatch, and Baywatch had a huge marketing push, and somehow they're talking about a sequel because it did well in life.
I'll be watching The House soon.
And like, did you, speaking of, last little dig on Baywatch, because, you know, we don't get enough chance to kick these things in the nuts. Did you see the little thing with Hoff at the end?
Yeah.
Like, oh, do I look like a little asshole so next to him? Like, no, you look like a little asshole because you look like a walking mummy. What the fuck? And to bring Pamela, to trot Pamela Anderson out for 10 seconds as you end the movie was just, like I said, miscalculation after miscalculation. Let's move on.
It just shouldn't have been a movie.
Yeah, it never
should have been. It's Baywatch. It should never have been that type of movie. You just can't take something like Baywatch and well, I don't know. I mean, what am I saying? 21 Jump Street. I don't know, man. You just got to get the right fucking people for something that's out there that you're going to totally revamp. But moving on. What else you got?
I got Batman versus Two-Face.
This is an animated movie.
Yeah, but not only is it the animated one, because these animated ones come out all the time. They even come out in theaters now. They just had Batman versus Harley Quinn playing on the big screen at one of those Fathom events. They had The Killing Joke. This is actually a direct sequel to Batman 66, which was renamed Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. So this is the Adam West ones. These are the ones that are mocking the television show from the 60s. And I loved the one that came out a few years ago. This one is the last recorded Batman anything that Adam West did. You know, he died obviously earlier in the year. He had some Family Guy episodes he had recorded along with this. He had completed his recording on this in October of 2016. And William Shatner plays Two-Face in this. And this is really an hour-long modernized episode. Modernized. It's modernly written. It's an homage to those old ones, and it plays just like those television shows. And I love that Batman 1966 television show. Before the Batman movie, that was the only Batman reference I had for visual medium. And I used to watch that on television every day after school until they had Batman the Animated Series, which kind of changed the game.
So good, yeah.
Which is fantastic. I mean, that's the high point in all this. Now, I loved this thing because it had Adam West and Shatner, and it was knowing and had in jokes about the series. So I highly recommend this. But if your cup of tea is The Killing Joke and things like that, the really nihilistic, downtrodden ones, you won't like this. Although I do like Under the Red Hood and Year One and a couple of those ones. But these to me are exactly what I want to look at when I see, you know, it's Mask of the Phantasm-esque in that it has nice production value. It's brightly lit. It's not, like I said, it's not the kind of the nihilistic, downbeat. Everything is terrible in Gotham. It's fun. They're just fun. And I really highly recommend this, especially because it's fun to hear Adam West doing the Joker Batman, and have Julie Newmar doing Catwoman and Burt Ward doing Robin. And the guys are all, you know, the gang's back in a lot of ways. So I highly recommend it.
Cool. My problem with these, or with the animated stuff, is that the varying levels of goodness that comes out of these, you know?
Yeah, they're all over the place. Well, even this one isn't as nicely drawn, as smoothly, you know, visually composed, and isn't nearly as bright and colorful as the one before it. So you can see that there's a little bit of a drop off from part one.
And
to
the
part
Marvel
three.
Ones, some of the Marvel ones are unwatchable. Like,
absolutely.
It's just like, holy shit, you guys really just threw this out there.
Yeah, those are things that are just filler on Netflix type things or Redbox. Yeah. You know, like Hulk versus Thor, and you know, or Planet Hulk, or some shit like that. It's just, those are really bad. Those are just to capitalize on whatever movie's out. Whereas this is a real little, this is a treat for fans, I think. All right, let's do Trailer Addict. Let's move on.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, dokey. Star Wars. Might as well just get it out of the way, right?
I mean, where? How did you see this? Did you see it on the web, or did you see this the premiere during Monday Night Football? Did you watch this live?
Oh, no. I watched it on YouTube a couple days after.
I watched it live, and then I had to go back and rewatch it to make sure I saw it right. I'm of two minds on this trailer. I'm of two minds. This is my problem with this. I loved the Force Awakens trailer. I loved the Rogue One trailer. I just can't trust these trailers to be about what they're about anymore.
Doesn't that ruin it a little bit? I was just going to say the same thing. I feel like almost I'm a little over like the eye candy and then the Star Wars music. Cause it's like, I do that with any fucking thing. Look at these video game trailers for these things. It's like, yeah, it's fucking Star Wars. All you're doing is telling me, hey, this is Star Wars. It's like, okay, but is it going to be good?
Well, not I mean, even that. Is it going to even have the scene even you're about? Showing me? Remember yeah. last year with Rogue One? I mean, yeah. I want to make sure that this is even going to be present, because now you're alluding that Kylo Ren is going to kill his mom and that, you know, she's
going to
go.
Yeah, that's probably taken out of context, right? He's probably in the movie, he's going to be aiming at someone else. Yeah, they just cut shit together. I know.
The thing is, as a trailer, though, it's a beautiful piece of pop art. Trailer cutting. It really
it's the
is.
Same as the others, so it's really not. I just don't think anything of it at this point. It's the same. The next one's going to be exactly the same. You know, it's going to be some good CGI space battles, people talking. You know, and it's Star Wars shit, so there's going to be people picking up lightsabers and Star Wars. You know, it like I don't. Can you fuck this up? You know, is it really that good anymore? If it's just so. Just self-explanatory at this point. Like, I don't know. Do you even need a blueprint for this?
I was just a little depressed that I wasn't as excited to see this trailer as I was when the first Force Awakens full trailer dropped, and I got a good look at that. And so it was like, oh, you know, it's becoming a little bit routine and
it's,
ordinary.
It's just
here.
Too much of the same, right? It's not special anymore, and yeah, they don't really seem to be trying to. Make anything special of it. They're really intent, which is a Disney thing, you know, to just keep doing the same thing over and over again until it doesn't work, right? They're just going to keep doing it.
Now, the movie itself might be absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I'm going to doubt that.
The trailer cutting here, the visual design and everything is brilliant. I mean, it looks fantastic. It catches you and whatnot. I just cannot trust it to be what it says it is.
Could you cut a bad movie out of it? Probably, or a bad trailer? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Not with
you?
The, I guess
they didn't show
elements.
You enough, right? They didn't show you anything. They just showed you some special effects, some people talking about the Force and shit. And it's like you're hooked, right? Because it's Star Wars. It's just normal Star Wars shit, right? It's like, didn't they really? I don't know. I guess I've never been one of these people that looks at these trailers and dissects it like as folks do. And so, because mainly I don't really think they give anything away. You know, I don't think that there's little hints in here. Oh, who's this guy? What's this guy doing? Oh, what's this over here? Oh my gosh, what's this? You know, and just the idea of like,
over. I don't think that's the
end. Just what's the little gerbil thing that screams and everyone goes ape shit? It's like, really? Like that could be a terrible character.
Or a pickup shot. Nothing. It could be a throwaway.
Yeah, he could just be in there every once in a while and go, ah! Was like, oh, how cute, you know? It's like, all right, make me a good fucking movie. I really feel like they need to earn my trust back, you know?
Yeah, especially after Rogue One, which I was not a fan of. All right, let's move on and talk about the second trailer for tonight. That's Roman J. Israel Esquire, the Denzel Washington courtroom drama turn.
Type thing, yeah. Taking
action
a
thriller.
Weird turn to like some crazy fucking storyline thing.
I do like this trailer, though.
I think this is a great trailer. I fucking want to see this really bad just because of that little twist. And not only that, but Denzel is picture perfect for this fucking role.
Right, he's killing this.
I mean,
role.
Holy shit, this movie is interesting.
As much as I hear terrible things that Denzel Washington was like a horrible human being from anybody that's ever worked on set with him, it's kind of like the whispered thing you keep reading about and you hear people talk about that have ever been around him. The guy is an absolute, just a fucking chameleon in his performances. And I say it in a strange way because he doesn't absolutely disappear always. He's always a little bit of himself. But at the same time, you watch something like Fences.
He's so prominent.
You watch this. You watch Training Day. It's a lot of just – he commands the fucking screen. And in this trailer, from the second he comes on, you're like, who is this awkward – he's compulsively watchable. Compulsively throughout this whole thing. And then I love when this trailer takes that weird turn and says,
oh my
from the
God,
director of
so
Nightcrawler,
weird, right?
You go, ooh, what's going
on? And then it gets fucking good, doesn't it? I mean, by the time he's being hunted down, basically, and they show that shot of him in the truck and the car is passing him and he's not sure, you know, is this a dude that's going to take a shot of him? Is this someone sent to kill him? And he's got to scrunch down in the fucking truck and try to drive and shit just to get away from the window. At that point, I'm just thinking, oh, this movie is going to be interesting.
I actually and well directed. Forward to this fall because a lot of these big time filmmakers and actors got projects that I'm excited about. Again, you got Ridley Scott with All the Money in the World. You got this. I mean, you got a lot of good stuff coming out.
Yeah, this is
in
the
this
year.
Next few months.
This is the year that real movies, right, actually are going to, I believe, beat the hell out of all these big action bonanza things that have totally flopped this year.
I've liked a lot of those movies that I didn't think I would like, you know, including Spider-Man and Wonder Woman and Guardians. So
no,
I was a little taken aback by that. But for, on the most part, I understand what you're saying.
I wouldn't list the those as obviously movies that have failed or would fall into that range. Right. I mean, we're really talking about things like Baywatch and other stuff that's been pushed as in that same vein of just spend the money, you know, and they will come. Transformers, right? I mean, there actually have been a bunch of them that were just downright awful, but there have been great ones.
Let's talk about Annihilation, Alex Garland's latest film, the author who wrote The Beach. I think I should go back and he should go back and redo The Beach, his version of it, because I'm sure it would be a lot more interesting than the one we got, even though I did kind of like that one back in the day. But regardless, Ex Machina, he did a couple years ago. This is a movie based on an original, I think a book he wrote, right? And then he's turning it into an original screenplay.
Did he write this book? I don't know.
Regardless, this looks like The Arrival, but a better version of The Arrival, as far as I'm concerned. What do you think about this?
Maybe. I didn't make that. Jeff Vandermeer wrote the novel. I didn't make this that connection, but you're right. This does look like a better version of that. This looks far more interesting than a lot of the alien stuff that we've been getting. And something that's going to be a little bit different, you know. I mean, Natalie Portman plays a biologist here who goes into this area, I guess. This
a terrarium,
like alien-infected area or something. It kind of reminded me of that Monsters movie a little bit, but it's a little more it's psychological, it feels like, and a little more world-altering. You know, it's like an alternate universe almost when they pass through that barrier and they go in there and they start seeing weird animals and just weird shit going on. And I like that the trailer gives enough to hook you, but not enough to where it gives anything away.
Which made me feel like a classic trailer technique. Like, that's a real trailer. That's how it used to be. It was just enough of a story wetness and let you know who the stars were and who the talent was. Now come find out what the fuck's going on. As opposed to, here's all the plot points. Come look out for all the fucking spectacle you can see.
Like, it's interesting. I just complained about this with the Star Wars trailer. but yeah, it works here better, I think, honestly. Just for the fact that this is something new, right? At least it seems to be.
Yeah, I think this looks great. Although this guy has a problem, I'd say, about making – he does very, very interesting films that are compelling. And then when it's time to fess up and show you the cards, I've been let down. You know, it's the resolution has never been as interesting as – just his writing. And also, I mean, The Beach has that problem. Ex Machina had that problem. They're to me, they're captivating for 2/3 of the way. And then that last – you go, ah, shit, you couldn't bring home the magic trick. Maybe this is the one that's going to be the
right. I would agree about that. You know, Sunshine, I felt that same way. Dread is fucking tits, though.
Dread is fucking tits. That's the one. I always forget that one roaming around. That is tits. This guy's got a nice little filmography, actually. He's got a tough little filmography. Unforgiving movies.
Yeah, we'll see. I think this looks interesting, at least. It looks like a good shot at something. That could beat expectations, you know. I mean, that's kind of rare nowadays. You kind of get your expectations up with the trailers, and almost they either deliver or they don't, right? But it's rare to find some things like Baby Driver or
any sleeper hits that are out there.
Yeah,
you know?
Something where you see it and you think, well, that could be, you know, that could be pretty good. That could be okay. I'd be interested. And then you see it and you're like, holy shit, you know, like kind of blows your mind in some way. Like, it just seems to be becoming rarer and rarer, I guess.
It is, especially with like I said, this holiday season, in the next 6 months, even up until February, March, looks pretty interesting.
Those expectations kind of are met, aren't they? Right. Like, with the Denzel Washington movie, you're not expecting. Could that movie, like, to blow your mind, though? I don't think it can, right? It would be too hard of a requirement for it, right? I don't know what it would take for it to really do that. It could be really, really, really good and meet your expectations.
I don't know. That movie looks like it could get dark, especially coming from the Nightcrawler type of vibe. So that movie could get real, real dark. But how dark? It's got Denzel and it's to a mass audience. So
yeah, well,
we shall see.
We'll see. I still think it looks good.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 327 for us tonight. We want to thank you guys all for joining us on this special podcast. We'll be back with you next for a retrospective podcast on Universal Soldiers. We'll be coming at you guys next week. Be sure to go to MovieMavericks.com. Check out our latest reviews for most of the reviews you heard on today's show and a few you haven't. Also, you can check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, and anywhere else you may be getting your podcasts for our back catalog. Once again, thank you guys for joining us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!